get the best players.
And it's one of those things where it's so.
Yeah.
Funny, we were saying that, we weren't.
Okay, we're back on the record. It's after the lunch break. Case number PU-12-59, Northern States Power Company request for advanced determination of prudence regarding Geronimo Wind application. And it's about 12:20. We took a break about 11:30. We concluded with the initial testimony of the company witnesses. It's now your turn, Mr. Grumman. Do you have anything else, Ms. Brahma, before we?
No, not with regard to our case. Oh, pardon me. My microphone was not. Not with regard to our case earlier. I understand we're going to have a PowerPoint presentation. I just want to make sure there isn't any trade secret material in the PowerPoint that we would need to close the room for.
No, there is not.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Advocacy staff calls Richard Hahn.
Mr. Hahn, you've heard the perjury admonition. It's incumbent on me to remind you that in this state, perjury is a Class C felony. Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment, a fine of $5,000, or both may be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Mr. Hahn, could you please state your name for the record?
His first name Richard, middle initial S, last name Hahn, H-A-H-N.
Mr. Hahn, have you prepared an opening statement today?
Yes.
And is that through a slideshow presentation currently on the smart board?
Yes, it is. I thought I would take advantage of the wonderful high technology here.
Absent objection, please proceed.
May.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Grumman. I'll try to be very efficient here and be very brief. I thank the Commission for the opportunity for allowing me to appear here today. I'd like to accomplish three things. One is to provide a very brief summary of my direct testimony. The second is to provide a very brief summary of the company's rebuttal testimony. And the third is to provide a very brief response to some of the issues that were raised in the company's rebuttal testimony. And let's see if this... Wonderful. In my direct testimony, I stated the following. I did not see a definitive need for this project. It appeared to me, and this is confirmed by the company, it was an opportunity purchase. The company's economic analysis showed a loss even with the project receiving capacity credits. Without that capacity credit, the loss got even larger to $23 million on a present value revenue requirements basis. The gas price, natural gas price forecast upon which that economic analysis was based, in my view, was out of date, and a more up-to-date forecast, even one prepared by the company, would increase that loss by nearly $41 million. So it's my assessment that this project would have a loss that ranged from $46 to $64 million, and on the basis of no need and the fact that it was not economic, I recommend that the request for the ADP not be granted. And my direct testimony also raised three other issues. I had some concerns over the net zero interconnect or NZI process or service. I raised some issues relative to the treatment of a bid that was received in the company's RFP from a North Dakota wind project. And I expressed some concerns about the disposition of the renewable energy certificates, or RECs. As I understand the company's rebuttal testimony, and I'm going to give a summary of what I think they said, the company asserted that as far as the standard of prudence goes, that assumptions that were used at the time the company made its decision should be used, that there should be no updates after that. And I think that was confirmed here this morning. Company testified that the project is still desirable and that it displaces higher cost generation and it protects against the expiration of the production tax credit and the implementation of future carbon prices. They further state that the FERC approval of the NZI justifies its use and that the value of the NZI has been appropriately captured in the PPA price. Continuing on, the company states that the project could convert to a conventional interconnection without upgrades, something else they confirmed here this morning. They believe they acted properly in rejecting the North Dakota wind project, and in support of that, they cite two pieces of evidence not contained in their direct case, which is that upgrade costs for certain MISO projects in a MISO cycle five, which is MISO reviews these projects in groups, and that the average cost was for this group, which does not include Prairie Rose Wind, averaged about $700 a kilowatt. And they also cite inadequate time to complete studies to determine whether any upgrades were in fact needed. And the company continues to believe that actively managing a REC portfolio is the best strategy. So as I see it, this case, there are really two groups of issues that the commission needs to address. They're not of equal importance. I think in the first group, which is the greatest importance, is there a need? Which assumption should you use? Should you get capacity benefits for this project? And what are the results of the economic evaluation? And in group two, I'll say of lesser importance, largely because they don't affect my decision on my recommendation. And even though I raised these concerns, and I believe these concerns are still valid, I acknowledge that regardless of the outcome here, it doesn't affect the recommendation that I make. And that's with the NZI, the treatment of the North Dakota Wind Project, and the disposition of RECs. Little bit of a timeline here, which I found helpful in reviewing this project. The company issued its RFP in September of 2010. They negotiated, or they picked Prairie Rose Wind in early 2011, I think it was January, and then they executed a PPA and filed it with the Minnesota Commission in June, and it was contingent on Minnesota Commission approval, but only Minnesota Commission. The Commission issued an order in December approving, the Minnesota Commission issued an order approving the PPA, and then the application was filed in this proceeding. Prairie Rose Wind began significant construction in terms of erection of the wind structures themselves in May, and that construction is scheduled to be completed by the end of the year, so they will qualify for the PTC. And the statutory deadline for a decision by this commission, which could come earlier, is January 7th. So let's talk about the issues. As far as need goes, I continue to believe that there is not a definitive need for this project. It is an opportunity purchase, and so I don't see that the commission should find that there is a need for the Prairie Rose Wind Project. As far as which assumptions to go, and I guess I really believe this is a very important decision, not only for this case, but for lots of cases. I really believe that a regulatory commission should be able to use the latest assumptions and information available at the time it renders its decision. That may be later than when the company decides, but as I'll explain later, most contracts or decisions that would require an ADP are not binding or not, they don't commit money until the regulatory approvals have been obtained. And by allowing the commission to update its assumptions fairly late in its deliberations, you protect the ratepayers from the impact of known major changes. And as I said, PPAs are typically not effective until the regulatory approvals are secured. Now, I'll talk about that point a little more in the future. Continuing on with the assumptions issue, nearly 2 years will pass by the time the company made its decision, and this body will make its decision. And the PPA was not filed until with this commission until after Minnesota approval. It's not contingent on approval by this commission, and the construction is scheduled to be completed before this commission could issue its order. And I believe, consistent with my experience in other jurisdictions, that the latest assumptions should be used, and that ADP should require approval of ADPs for which items will be placed in rates should require approval of this commission before a commitment is made. And that, in my view, would be best achieved by simultaneous filings with all, with any other commissions, including ones that the company needs to do business with. As far as capacity benefits go, with an NZI, you don't get capacity. It's as simple as that. The cost and timing of achieving a conventional interconnection, as we heard this morning, is uncertain. While the company believes that it might occur in 2018-19 with no additional cost, we simply don't know that. There's no contractual obligation, as I read the PPA, for Prairie Rose Wind to even seek a conventional interconnection. And if they do and if they get it, I do not see a contractual obligation for them to sell that capacity or to provide that capacity to the company within the PPA price. So I conclude from that that the capacity benefits should not be included in the economic evaluation. As far as the economic evaluation issue goes, the company's rebuttal testimony updates certain assumptions about wind integration costs and REC sale revenues that were not in their filed analysis. They continue to include, in at least a couple of the analyses, the capacity benefits, which I don't believe are appropriate. They declined to update natural gas prices. As I said earlier, I don't believe the capacity benefits should be included, nor do I believe the REC revenues should be included in the economic analysis, and I'll explain that reason why a little later. But fundamentally, I believe that the value of those RECs at this point is too uncertain to be counted on. Without capacity benefit and REC sales, the PPA is not economic, even with the company's dated gas price assumptions. And with the updated assumptions, that loss gets even greater. And again, I conclude that this project is not economic. So those are the first of the three what I call greater importance issues. As far as the NZI goes, I continue to have concerns, despite the progress made at FERC, about the fairness and the non-discriminatory nature of this interconnection option. I will admit that it's probably too late to address it in this proceeding. And if you don't include the capacity benefits, those concerns about non-discriminatory access really won't have an impact on my recommendation here. I do note that, in my view, the company has set a precedent of allowing an NZI on this system at zero cost. So whether they can or can't prevent that from happening again is uncertain to me. And I think that the commission should look at future NZIs to the extent that they do arise from the company. But my concerns about the non-discriminatory nature of this interconnection do not affect my decision here. Similarly, for the North Dakota Wind, the issues I raise relative to this project do not have a bearing on my recommendation regarding the ADP. I did express some concerns as to how this project was treated. The company provided some additional information, but they were unable to provide the actual bid documents so that I could look at them. But in order to simplify this proceeding, I will withdraw my concerns about this project as it does not affect my recommendation regarding the ADP. And as far as RECs go, I believe that the REC revenues are highly uncertain as to whether they will occur or not. I don't believe they should be included in an economic analysis. The disposition process used for RECs, whether you do it my way, you do it the company's way, does not affect the recommendation here. So I will accept, as Ms. Clark said, the company's continued role in actively managing its REC portfolio, so long as that can be reviewed in the future. We're not making a definitive stance one way or another in this proceeding. And I think more transparency would be needed. It's my understanding the company has accepted and is willing to provide additional information to this commission in its annual report. So with that, I would say my concerns over the REC disposition as far as the ADP goes, we can agree to move forward. In conclusion, I believe that this PPA, there's not been a need demonstrated for it. I believe that it's not economic. I recommend that this ADP request be denied. And as far as regardless of what happens, I believe that the commission should be able to use updated assumptions when they make its decision that future resource decisions should be contingent on approval of this board and that there should be simultaneous filings with all commissions that the company appears before. And with that, that's my opening remarks. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present them. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you.
Mr. Subject to redirect, we make this witness available for cross-examination.
Okay. Ms. Brammer.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Hahn, you used in your presentation just now and in your testimony the phrase opportunity purchase to characterize the Prairie Rose project, correct?
I did.
And you recall we issued some discovery in this proceeding with regard to that.
And I answered them.
You did. And, in fact, you told us that an opportunity purchase shouldn't be considered per se unreasonable. Is that correct?
I don't have the data. Do you have the data request in front of
I do. So I'd be happy to share it. If I may, Your Honor.
You may.
It may be helpful just to mark this so that it's part of the record.
It's a good idea. Do you have enough copies for everyone?
I do.
Are you going to offer it too? Or?
I think we will, yes.
Okay, then let's identify it. This will be 12. Do you have something else pre-marked 12, or can we mark it 12?
No, I do not have anything pre-marked 12. Mr. Grumman?
No.
Okay. That'll be Exhibit 12.
And this can be public, as there's no trade secret data in this document.
Yes, those words are in this answer.
Okay. And let's just make sure we get this document in the record, if we could. Exhibit 12 has been marked. Are these your responses to data request 3 from the company to the commission advocacy staff and to yourself?
Yes.
Is this a true and correct copy of your responses?
I believe it is, yes, ma'am.
Okay. With that, we'd offer these into the record, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, Exhibit 12 will be received.
Okay. So just to follow up on that, in Part B here, I read your response that Mr. Hahn does not consider an opportunity purchase to be per se unreasonable or imprudent, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And it goes on to say that each such opportunity would have to be evaluated based on its own merits and specific project factors, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Those words are there.
Okay. And is that still your position today?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'd like to follow up on a couple of things that were in your presentation just to make sure that we are understanding. You opined here that REC values should not be included in strategist modeling for the project. Can you explain your position there?
Well, I said that the REC, as far as I know, the company does not include REC in its strategist modeling. What I said was the REC should not be included in the economic comparison.
Okay.
So let me clarify that it's my understanding that the company in its initial filing did not include RECs because strategist doesn't do that, but that in its rebuttal testimony, it added in the value of RECs as an external calculation to strategist in the economic analysis.
Okay. And is it your position the company should not include the value of RECs in its economic analysis?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And why is that your position?
Well, because at this point, the value of those RECs is very speculative. There's no, right now, no market, no mandatory market for these RECs to be dispensed to. And the company has also said that it wants to hold on to these RECs in the event that the future value is greater than it is today. And in my mind, that is too uncertain a revenue stream to be included in an economic analysis. If you were investing... Well, if I were investing in a wind project and the make-or-break decision was the value of these RECs, I would not do it. I consider it to be speculative.
Okay. And that's only one factor in the company's analysis today, correct?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, there was other factors besides REC in the economic analysis of the Prairie Rose project in Mr. Hager's rebuttal, correct?
Well, sure. I think we talked about capacity credit being one and obviously natural gas prices.
Okay. And have you taken an independent analysis of the value of RECs in this region or in the company system?
Well, the answer is no. And the reason why is there's no published market indices. There's no exchange traded value. In the eastern jurisdictions, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, I'll take Rhode Island, for example, because I just did a project in Rhode Island. You can go to several commodity exchanges and find the value of a Rhode Island Class 1 wreck, which is an actual cash transaction. It's kind of like NYMEX for wrecks. So in the eastern states, and then also in the eastern states, you have a mandatory requirement for each state to either acquire a certain amount of wrecks or pay an alternative compliance payment. So in that instance, you can be sure that, yeah, there's likely going to be a market, and we have a good idea of what the current, at least, prices are, and you can make projections in the future about the supply and demand of wrecks and make an intelligent, informed forecast. I don't see any way to do that here.
Okay. All right. Thank you. No further questions at this time.
Mr. Grubin, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Kotsako.
Mr. Hahn, if this is in the If this is in your testimony, I apologize. The pilot program that NSP was under in North Dakota to liquidate the wrecks and run the benefits through the fuel adjustment. Are you aware of that particular order, case number 1019?
I am aware that there was a prior docket where the company was ordered to do that, yes.
And in your analysis of this case, did you determine if there were any subsequent decisions, like in the rate case, that changed that particular pilot program? I honestly simply don't know and didn't have time to look for that detail in the record.
I don't recall any. If they were, and if either I or my staff found them, I don't recall them at this point.
Okay. So I just want to follow through. If the commission decides to adopt that particular recommendation, that would require some sort of revision to this pilot program so that there's no benefit coming through the fuel adjustment and then also no use of some kind of a benefit in a cost-benefit analysis for a particular project. Is that – am I –
All right, I'm a little confused by your question. Are you asking me whether if the company had done this pilot program and sold wrecks and flowed those benefits through to rates, what?
Well, then wouldn't it have to be in their cost benefit analysis? Or if we adopted the flip, your recommendation, and took it out of the cost benefit analysis, we'd have to quit making them.
Well, okay, I now understand your question. Thank you. I mean, I think had the company, done an actual transaction for wrecks from wind projects, they may have, and let's say they did this last month, that would be a price point. But we still would not know what the demand for these wrecks would be going forward, which markets they could be assured of selling them in. I mean, right now, it's my understanding that the company cannot sell North Dakota's share of its project's wrecks to other utilities in Minnesota until sometime well into the future. Other wreck markets in this area, like Wisconsin, they require bundled wrecks and energy together, kind of like what the company has bought here from Prairie Rose Wind. So the company couldn't sell them in North Dakota. We're not aware of any other neighboring state where these things would really have value. So even if you had a price point from a recent sale, that would not necessarily convince me that you should include these in an analysis of a long-term PPA.
Okay, I appreciate that. I was trying to see if there was a conflict there between the two.
I don't think there's a conflict, but to me, I actually thought the idea of a pilot program was a reasonable thing. I'll explain. The reason is that a lot of utilities have a decision to make They can actively manage a portfolio, be it RECs, be it power supply. And some utilities don't want to take the risk of a regulatory ruling on that activity. So in the event that bad things happened and their strategy didn't work out and actually cost money instead of made money, would the company be liable for that? In other jurisdictions, what I've seen done is they will do what I'll call a program schedule of either procurements or sales. Every 3 months, we're going to sell X percent of our portfolio, or every 3 months, we're going to buy Y percent of our portfolio. And that's on a scheduled basis. And so there's really no ability to, quote unquote, you know, look at this and determine whether the company is liable or not, because everyone agrees that this is a reasonable procurement schedule to go after. And that's what I suggested here. Now, I respect the company's ability and what they think they can do, but I'm not willing to say that we should not have any chance to look at this in the future. The company go ahead and manage its portfolio, and, you know, if there are issues to be raised, they can be raised by staff in the future.
So if I understand the bottom line on the two benefits, that your recommendation is that you do not, the company should not and the commission should not include a benefit from the capacity or a benefit from selling the RECs in the cost-benefit analysis. Is that correct?
Of Prairie Rose Wind, yes.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Questions from the commissioners. Chairman Cock.
Thank you, Your Honor. How many years have you been doing this, you said?
Well, I've been a consultant at La Capra for 9 years, and I worked for NSTAR Electric and Gas for 30, so close to 39.
So is the type of discussion that we're having here today, is this occurring in other areas that you're testifying in?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Except my experience in other areas is companies come and request advance approval of some kind before they commit. In this case, that didn't happen. That's pretty unusual, in my view. The fact that they say they don't want to update their assumptions, that happens in lots of other jurisdictions. So utilities do come in and ask for prudence reviews in other jurisdictions, and I've been a party to several of them. But those two features, I think, are unique to here. To this case.
Fair enough. Let me ask just some questions about, you talked about opportunity purchase. Let's go back however many years ago when we were building coal plants, coal making electricity. You know, maybe if the company only needed 200 megawatts, it would cost a certain amount. But if they sized it to 500 megawatts, it was a better size engineering. The cost was more. They didn't need the power, but they built it at that size to hedge themselves against future cost increases. We way overbuilt coal back in the 70s, but which kept us have our electricity costs very, very low. Does that relate at all to overbuilding back then, which as a hedge cost, that maybe this is doing that now, or we get something that's a good deal now that in the end our costs might be lower?
Well, I wasn't involved when those decisions back then were made.
But you understand
that. Sure. And let me say, what I expect happened back then is the company said, okay, we need a 200-megawatt coal plant, and let's analyze that. And let's analyze what happens if we build a 500-megawatt coal plant and sell off that 300-megawatt surplus, let's say, for 10 years. I'm sure the company did an economic analysis. They went out and they said, okay, who can I sell this to? What price can I get? Am I going to make money? Is that deal going to produce a benefit to ratepayers? And I'm willing to bet they did this, and they showed to the commission that, gee, this is economic. So it is analogous to what we're doing here. The problem is it's not economic.
How can you say that not knowing what, okay, let's the 200 megawatts. Right now, take your point, they don't need it right now. Okay, but if we get it now at this price, then all of a sudden down the road we needed 200 megawatts and the price is a whole bunch more. How can you compare those two price points? Because we don't know what the future cost is going to be.
It
could be higher or it could be lower.
Right. And so you make decisions based on, one thing Mr. Hager said, I agree with him. You have to make decisions based on the best decision available to you. The company has to do it. and the commission has to do it. So back going to your example of the coal overbuild, whatever assumptions you made about market prices, about the incremental cost of 300 megawatts, somebody based on that time concluded that based on the information that we can see going forward, this is going. Do we think this is going to be an economic deal? Now, it may have turned out to be even a better economic deal, or it may have turned out to be a bust. But at least at the time you made the decision, there was an economic analysis that supported the additional 300 megawatts.
You make that point that 200 megawatts of energy in the future is going to be more affordable than what it is right now.
Because based on the current assumptions, which are not my assumptions, they're the company's assumptions, it doesn't make sense. It's not economic. So just like when you decided to build 300 megawatts of coal, you looked at coal prices. You didn't know what they were going to be, but you made your best estimate of what coal prices were going to be for 20 or 30 years, and you based your decision on that. And now what I'm saying is if you do the same thing here, you reach a conclusion that it's not economic.
Fair enough. I maybe have to focus some follow-up down the road at that.
Okay.
The North Dakota project, which we won't use a name because that's trade secret, could you walk me through a little bit more detail why you felt the company should have continued that farther on, that planning process farther down the road? I don't remember your exact words you used in your testimony, but it should not have been removed as quickly or something like that.
Right. What the company did in its RFP is they received a bunch of bids for projects that they would own, and they received a bunch of bids for projects which they would sign a PPA. It's my understanding they analyzed these two groups separately. And from them, they picked a short list, a handful of projects. I won't say the exact number. And that short list of projects was deemed, quote unquote, to be the best, the most viable, the best economics. And then the company proceeded to negotiate and analyze each project in more detail. And this project that we're talking about was not included in the shortlist, but it was very, very, very attractive in my view. And so I suggested that, you know, and at the time the company hadn't provided like the RFP bids or other detail about
why. Was there a timing component too in the testimony that you talked about?
There were two main reasons that I understand. One is that the company was concerned that it would not make a December 31st, 2012 in-service date because of the length of time to do the MISO interconnection. And that it was, uncertain about what the cost of that would be. And it's also there was some uncertainty if they didn't make December 31st, 2012, and the PTC were not renewed, that would have an impact on the economic analysis, which I won't go into because that's confidential. So that's my understanding of the company's explanation. And as I said earlier this morning, I'll accept that for now because it doesn't really bear on, in my view, the ADP decision. If that project had never been bid, it would not affect my conclusion.
Fair enough. Let me take one more run at my build something in the future question. And I'm not getting what you're saying, and I'll talk to my staff and we'll figure it out. But is there ever a time when you have or you would think where buying something now you may not need or overbuilding right now is a good idea?
Sure. I in the case of your and that's why I said you have to look at the sort of the benefits of each opportunity or each transaction. I mean, if I believed in 1975 that it was a good idea that I could produce net revenues from the sale of that incremental 300 megawatts, then maybe that was a reasonable thing to do. But it should be supported by an analysis that shows there's a likelihood, at least, under the base case assumptions.
How would you analyze that? That it's something in the future you have no idea what the cost of gas is going to be, or if the production tax credit gets renewed 2 years from now, or if solar becomes the best thing ever? I mean, how do you compare that with something that you don't know a cost in the future?
Because all of these are projections. I mean, you don't know the cost of that coal plant. You may think you have an idea, but the actual cost could be much greater than what you think it was going to cost.
So is there somewhere in their testimony or what you did that there was a cost of this opportunity, if I say projected cost, where of getting 200 megawatts in the future, where it would cost more to get it now than it would in the future?
Well, the company has said that, but if you look at the PPA has a set price. That price isn't going to change. Okay, so we kind of know what the cost is on one side of the equation.
I see your point.
On the alternatives, you make your best shot. You use the best information that you have, and I believe that it should be the most current information, and you make a decision and go on. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you come back 5 years after approval and question it. All I'm saying is up until all regulatory commissions have made their decision, it's not binding on the company, or it shouldn't be.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Kramer.
Well, just following up on that, I mean, make the point, I could use a more extreme example. I mean, if the price of gas today were $14 a decatherm, I would hope that we wouldn't sit here and go, yeah, but this application, at the time the application was two, so therefore, you know, gas is the best way to go.
Yes, exactly.
I want to explore just a little more of this issue of need, because Mr. Hager was quite emphatic about the fact that's the wrong question. That the right question is the right question is not do you need it. Could you flesh that out a little bit more for me? Your objection to that.
Well, as I heard Mr. Hager's testimony this morning, he conceded there was no need for capacity or need for RECs, but what he said was, this is an economic purchase. Well, I disagree. It's only economic if you include an outdated gas price forecast, if you include capacity revenues, and if you include REC revenues. And, you know, he made a statement that says Prairie Rose Wind, I think it said, competes with coal and natural gas. Mm-hmm. I disagree. Prairie Rose Wind is going to run when the wind blows. Mm-hmm. And if that rate that Northern States Power is buying it at is higher than it would cost to run one of Northern State Power's coal plants, they're still going to buy Prairie Rose Wind. Well, it doesn't compete.
Well, then let me ask your opinion on this statement then that I heard this morning, I've heard before, that wind is a hedge against gas. And I've scratched my head so many times over that statement because I don't see how wind's a hedge against anything.
Well, the it's true to a degree. Wind is not dispatchable.
Right.
Okay, it's you take it when the wind blows. So when MISO dispatches their system, they make an assumption. If I've got 30,000 megawatts of wind in the system, here's how much I'm going to get each hour tomorrow. And they kind of assume that's there, and then they dispatch their nukes and their coal, and then they get into the gas and the peaking. So by injecting a source at the bottom of the supply stack, you basically lower the price at which the market clears. And so in theory, that has what's called a price suppression effect. Mm-hmm. Now, that effect has been captured in the company's strategist model. So I believe that they've accounted for that benefit. Okay. But the problem is that I don't believe it's economic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that was the other component of need that I heard Mr. Hager talk about.
Well, let me ask this real basic question on behalf of ratepayers in North Dakota. If this purchase was never made, what practical impact would it have on the XL Energy ratepayers of North Dakota?
If this purchase were not made, when MISO dispatched the system, and let's assume Prairie Rose Wind didn't get built.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so it wouldn't be there. MISO would not have that energy. It would dispatch the next least expensive unit, which, quite frankly, could be lower in cost than the PPA rate here. And so if it were lower, then North Dakota customers would save money by not having this PPA. If the replacement market price were higher than the PPA rate, then it'd be an additional cost. Now, it looks to me, from the company's analysis, that certainly in the early years of this contract, it's going to be an added cost.
That's how it looks to me as well. I want to flesh out a little more as well what you consider to be quite unique in that they're requesting an advance determination of prudence on a decision that's already been made. And I referenced that in my opening as well, one of my concerns, because we've always stated that, and you've used the term denial of ADP, we've always stated that that doesn't necessarily mean that we've determined it to be imprudent, but we're not. In this case, though, if we were to deny, are you simply suggesting we deny the advanced determination of prudence, or are you suggesting that this is an imprudent investment?
I'm suggesting that the request for the ADP be denied, simply because the company has not made a case for it. Now, I did not go the other way and say the purchase was imprudent, because that wasn't the question that was in front of me, but clearly it's a question that the commission might have to address. And so, and I think you have to look at sort of the rate recovery for this and make a determination that either it should or it shouldn't be recovered, or part of it shouldn't be recovered.
Mm-hmm. All right. I agree with your statement that the treatment of the Northco Wind project is of lesser importance, except to the degree in the larger context of the pledge to do a North Dakota Wind project, it raises this fundamental question of trust.
Well, I did read the company's testimony about its pledge to do that, and that's why I initially raised that issue. And at some point, as I heard discussion this morning, this commission and the company may have to address that commitment, but I just thought it would simplify the case if it was removed from this docket.
All right. I agree. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Commissioner Fetch.
Thank you. I guess I'm wrestling with some of the same questions that Commissioner Kalk raised about, you know, this being an opportunity purchase. And, you know, both Laura McCartan and Kurt Hager, you know, said it is a question of opportunity, that this is an opportunity purchase. And you agreed with that, Mr. Hahn. And, you know, the whole, I guess I am wrestling with looking down the road. Isn't it kind of a prudent business decision to look down the road and see if we're at this point now and we can make this purchase at this whatever cost you come up with? Isn't that a prudent decision when you're looking down the road and looking at costs increasing?
I think it's a prudent activity to look. Absolutely. But when that look tells you that this opportunity is going to cost $66 million more, I think you have to think twice.
Okay, could you speak a little bit more about the natural gas price forecast and its effect here?
Sure. In the company's original analysis of the Prairie Rose Wind, which, as I understand it, was done in January of 2011, they had a forecast of natural gas prices. They didn't know for sure what it was going to be, but I think we heard this morning Mr. Hager describe how they look at various price forecasting services. So they produced a forecast of what they thought was their base case or most probable estimate of gas prices for the next 20 years. And they actually had a high case and a low case. So when we looked at this project, which was now in the summer of 2012, or a year and a half later, we looked and we said, wow, gas prices have come down a lot. since January 2011. And it looked to us like at the time the company filed here that the company's low case from January 2011 was more in line with what the current markets were. So we thought that should be the basis of the analysis.
All right, thank you. I don't think I can address a couple of my other questions. I'll visit with staff about those. Thank you.
Commissioners?
Maybe just one follow-up to what Commissioner Kramer was saying. So you and Commissioner Kramer had a discussion about, you know, maybe this doesn't fit the role of an advanced determination of prudence, but at some point in time the company comes back in and we have to determine what, if this was prudent at all or what level. But, I mean, hypothetically, there could be a scenario, no matter what the commission does, the company comes back in front of here at some point in time and hydraulic fracturing is outlawed, and it turns out that at that point 3 years from now, let's say looking back, this turns could this turn out to be a good deal if all of a sudden all those other variables change?
It could, or it could turn out to be an even worse deal.
Absolutely.
And so
But just the point, though, is that what you're saying is based on what your market predictions, but we'll never quite know until we get to that point.
Well, one other thing I agree with Mr. Hager is if I was able to accurately forecast the future, I'd get a lot more money somewhere else. But
I want to join you guys' firm, by the way.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that the commission has a decision in front of it.
Absolutely.
And you have to use, in my view, you have to use the best available information. It may turn out to be a great decision, may turn out to be not so good a decision. But the tough job that you've been challenged with is to make a decision today on a long-term investment.
Absolutely. And then you brought up the point, which I should have probably brought up more with the questioning with the company today, is why there was different time frames with the different jurisdictions. I mean, could you explain why you think that might have taken place from your experience?
Well, what I heard this morning was that the company wanted to know for certain that it would have Minnesota approval before it came to this commission. And I don't subscribe to that theory. You're doing business in North Dakota. It may be a small piece of your operation, but you're doing business here, and you're subject to the regulation of this commission. So I don't see any reason why you should treat this commission any differently than Minnesota or Wisconsin or anywhere else. I just don't.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Commissioners? Anything else? Ms. Brahma?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Hahn, you may step down.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. I thought you'd have quite a bit more. Mr. Grumman?
Obviously, staff calls Chris Morrell.
Okay. Mr. Morrell, you've heard the perjury admonition many times, so I'll just remind you, ask you to raise your right hand. You promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please state your name, position, and business address.
My name is Christopher A. Morrell, last name M-A-R-O-H-L. I'm employed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission as a public utility analyst.
Please summarize your professional experience and qualifications.
I received a Bachelor of Science degree in finance and a minor in economics from North Dakota State University. I've worked for the commission for the past 2 years on various projects, including but not limited to Northern States Power Company's last rate case, numerous advanced determination of prudence cases, and electric transmission rate rider cases, and numerous transmission generation siting cases.
Have you previously testified before this commission?
No, I have not.
On whose behalf are you appearing in this proceeding?
I'm testifying on behalf of the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff.
Please describe the purpose of your testimony.
I'm providing policy analysis that represents the interests of North Dakota ratepayers.
And please summarize your conclusions and recommendations.
Based upon my review of NSP's application, I conclude that the project is not needed and the forecasted benefits do not reasonably exceed the forecasted costs. I recommend that the requested ADP not be granted.
Why are we here today?
Notwithstanding the terms of a settlement agreement and affirmed by the commission requiring the company to file for an ADP for any new generating facility or purchase of at least 50 megawatts, I believe we are here today solely because of Minnesota's renewable energy statute.
Can you please explain?
Let us look at the company as if it were operating without Minnesota's renewable requirements. There's little projected load growth, and the company has a well-functioning fleet of generating resources. In fact, the company expects to operate with excess capacity until 2017. In other words, in general, NSP is currently meeting and forecasted to meet its duty under North Dakota law and general public utility principles to provide adequate service at just and reasonable rates. It could be said that this was confirmed with the company's latest rate increase application granted in February 2012 by this commission. Outside of requiring renewable energy, why would NSP be seeking this purchase power agreement? Let me put it another way. You own a car that works perfectly well at a reasonable cost. You have no need for another car, but decide to lease a brand new one anyway. The new car requires no fuel, but you can only drive it when the wind blows. This isn't a prudent action for a majority of people, and it isn't a prudent action for a regulated utility.
Doesn't the company show that Prairie Rose Wind benefits North Dakota ratepayers?
No. The company's own analysis, as presented in its pre-filed testimony, shows that the Prairie Rose Wind scenario costs $23 million more than an alternative on a net present value basis, aka the costs outweigh the benefits. The company says the added cost is minimal and that a few tweaks should be made to lower wind integration costs and forecasted renewable energy credits revenues to the point where having Prairie Rose Wind could be $4.5 million cheaper than without Prairie Rose Wind on a net present value basis. As the company makes its adjustments to keep the cost-benefit ratio near one, let us not forget that the project is not needed. Perhaps for cases like the Manitoba Hydro PPA ADP that this commission recently approved, such a delta is reasonable because the project is needed to provide service. However, if a regulated utility wants to add a project that isn't needed to provide service, the benefits should be forecasted to greatly exceed the costs.
Are there benefits to North Dakota ratepayers from being part of NSP's integrated system that should be taken into account?
I agree with the company's witnesses that outline the benefits of being part of an integrated system by taking advantage of a diversified customer base, diversified generation, and economies of scale. From my perspective, the vision of various states that NSP operates in has largely been the same in the past. So the ability to operate an integrated system worked well. However, the vision of the various states has diverged. Look at the example of NSP's nuclear plants that Ms. McCartan champions as a benefit of operating an integrated system. Minnesota politicians have prohibited new nuclear generation and gave NSP a more aggressive renewable energy requirement than the rest of the utilities operating in Minnesota because of its nuclear plants. These kinds of policies deviate from North Dakota's understanding of least cost and best practice for ratepayers. We are not seeking to impose our policies or vision on Minnesota constituents, but seek to keep Minnesota's policies or vision from being imposed upon us. As a matter of fact, disallowing this wind project puts NSP that much closer to reaching its renewable mandate, since Minnesota can have North Dakota's allocated share of renewable energy credits. To me, an integrated system where one state is calling the shots for everyone is not an integrated system as much as it is a totalitarian system. This can be seen by the fact that the Manitoba Hydro PPA, this PPA, and no doubt other agreements are contingent on being approved by the Minnesota Commission and not the North Dakota Commission.
Really, what is your opinion as to what North Dakota's regulated utility should do with its RECs beginning in 2015?
Since the objective is voluntary and there is no penalty or sanction, I think that the most prudent thing to do would be to continue the sale of RECs and distributing a portion of those revenues to ratepayers and recognizing the principle of least cost.
Does this conclude your testimony?
Yes.
Your Honor, subject to redirect, we open this witness up for cross-examination.
Ms. Prima.
We have no questions for this witness, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
And we have no questions.
Commissioners. Sure. Chairman Koch.
Thank you, Chris. This is the first time testifying, but you've been in that chair a lot, haven't you, over the last couple of years?
I have.
You know, you said that, according to what you've looked at, this is XL can meet all of its demands until 2017, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any gray area that you found in that? That, I mean, that's based on projections like everything else, right?
Right.
Okay. Of the, I think you said $23 million, do you have any way of knowing how much of that would be allocated in North Dakota or how much of the 200 megawatts how the cost?
Be approximately at 5.8% subject to
okay.
The gentleman behind me.
Fair enough. So then the cost, we could figure that out of the average customer. Okay. Fair enough. Your testimony was very, very clear, I think, what your points were. When you talked about the Manitoba Hydro, tell me again the differences of what you see between the Manitoba Hydro and this particular case.
For the most part, that contract provides capacity, where this one does not.
And that was already a renewal of an existing one or something like that, wasn't
correct.
It?
Correct.
Okay. I think that was all that I had, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Kramer.
I don't have any questions. I just appreciate very good and clear testimony.
Mr. Fetch.
I think it speaks for itself, and I don't have any questions.
Any follow-up? Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Brownman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
No, sir.
Mr. Merrill, you could step down. Okay. Do you have any additional witnesses?
Advocacy staff does not.
Do you have anything that you want to put into the record?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
We do not. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Brahma, back to you then. Any rebuttal?
We do anticipate calling a couple of witnesses on rebuttal. I wonder if we could maybe take a short break at this point just to make sure we have everybody know what's coming.
How long would you like?
Oh, 10 minutes or so.
Let's make it 15.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll be back at 1:35.
Okay.
Okay, back on the record, Ms. Brahma, we're going to proceed with your rebuttal case now.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. We'd like to recall Carrie Chilcott-Clark, please.
Ms. Clark. It's just a reminder that you're under oath. Yeah, I don't have to give you the oath again, so you may proceed.
All right, thank you. Ms. Clark, there's been some discussion about REC valuation and the REC marketplace, in particular Mr. Hahn's testimony. Thought it might be helpful to back up for a moment. And would you mind just discussing briefly your personal experience dealing with the REC marketplace in your position for NSP?
Yes. In my position with Xcel Energy Services, I manage the entire REC portfolio, as we talked about earlier, for all 8 states. So we have had quite a bit of experience selling RECs across all of those 8 states. And I think we've done a good job of looking for opportunities that
are not available to everybody, and finding the increased value for the RECs. An example is for a public service company in Colorado, we've sold over 4 million RECs into the California market, and it took years of understanding the legislation there, working with the regulations, and determining how to sell a REC that was bundled with energy into that California market. We've also sold RECs into 5 other states as well. And so we're constantly looking for RFPs. The markets organization for Xcel Energy Services has they're very strong on building relationships with other entities, so we can do bilateral transactions. So the deal that I discussed this morning with the broker was, you know, an example of a possible transaction that the broker came to us and said, we have this need that we need to fill. Do you have RECs that you can fulfill this transaction with?
Do you consider NSP to be on the cutting edge of REC management, particularly in the upper Midwest?
I feel Xcel Energy Services as a whole, for
sure,
all of our RECs, I think we're certainly on the cutting edge of REC transactions. There's not an over-the-counter market. It's more bilateral transactions. We've looked into the North Carolina market. It's taken us a year to register a facility down there so that we could sell RECs down into that state for an increased value. So as a whole, I think Xcel Energy Services, with the employees that we have to work all of the states nationwide, not just the Xcel Energy states, but we are, you know, North Carolina, we don't serve any load there, but we certainly have the ability.
I'm sorry. To transact into that market as well.
Now, does the lack of a central market for RECs make it impossible to value RECs, either for present or future value?
No. As I showed in my rebuttal testimony, there are 3 brokers that we used in the creation of our REC forecast give indicative prices for the RECs. And those prices were rolled into an average that was used in Witness Hager's testimony.
Okay. Now, how do we judge demand for RECs going forward?
The demand for RECs is in the compliance market anyway. It's looked at by the increase in the renewable energy standards or the renewable portfolio standards. So we see all of these portfolio standards increasing, so the demand for RECs in the compliance market is certainly going to increase.
Okay. And are there particular areas where RECs have greater value or lesser value in the country that you're looking at?
There certainly is. Like I said, in North Carolina, they have some specific carve-outs that make those RECs, poultry litter waste is one of them, make those RECs more valuable. And so we can sell RECs into that market at a premium price because there are not very many poultry litter waste facilities in the United States. So that gives us an opportunity to sell into that market at a premium.
Now, you mentioned in your testimony that the market for RECs is still maturing or it's immature at this point. How do you see the Midwest REC market evolving?
I think that the demand is obviously going to increase because the renewable energy standards are increasing. The PTC, if it expires, it certainly will have an effect on the market because if the PTC expires, there will be less wind development. So I think what we have to be careful of is that we don't just look at the Midwest market and just put our blinders on and say this is the only price that we can look at, because as we've shown, we need to look across the entire United States and see what values are there. And I think Xcel Energy has done a good job of using that disparity between the regional markets and between the renewable portfolio standards to find those opportunities that are a premium to just looking at that Midwest market.
Maybe it would be helpful, too, just to underscore kind of on a day-to-day basis what kinds of activities you take. I know you mentioned sort of broadly looking for RFPs, things like that. Mm-hmm. But maybe talk a little bit about what kinds of activities you take on a day-to-day basis to really actively manage the portfolio and make sure you're finding the best deals for North Dakota ratepayers.
So there's a couple of different ways that we manage the REC portfolio. One is looking for opportunities. So that's, you know, reviewing legislation like I talked about in California, lobbying, sometimes lobbying legislatures to help us with this. It's looking at the import-export issue across multiple REC tracking systems. There currently isn't, you currently can't export a REC from MRETS, the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System, to Regis, which is the tracking system for the WEC. You cannot export a REC from MRETS to Regis. And I led a national committee, a national group of utilities and regulators to try and get that to happen. Now, it hasn't happened, but it certainly did get the ball rolling, and we now have some import exports from one regional tracking system to another. I think when as we continue to work towards import export across the entire United States from tracking system to tracking system, that's certainly going to open up more opportunities.
So with that background, we talked earlier, and I think Advocacy Staff Council asked you a little bit about the valuation of RECs and the Schedule 1 to Mr. Hager's, make sure I've got the right one, his rebuttal testimony. Mm-hmm. How does the average price of $1.51 per REC fit into your view of where REC pricing is going and what prices might do in the future?
All right. For this modeling purpose, we were conservative, and we focused only on the MISO market. So that's where these prices in this strip on his Schedule 1 came from. Those prices came from, like I said before, the average of independent brokers. They were not developed by Xcel Energy. They were developed by the independent brokers. And I believe in Mr. Hager's testimony, he also even backed down from those numbers and used an even more conservative approach that started at, looks like, 54 cents and then escalated from there so that it was an average of $1.50 across the entire length of the contract. I think with the benefit of the market operations and the management of the RECs across all of Xcel's 8 states, that we can, Xcel can certainly find opportunities that will exceed these prices. I'm not going to guarantee that, of course, but I think these prices in here are conservative because they are only looking at the MISO market.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, just to recap, your position is that the likelihood that we'll be able to achieve the $1.51 in REC pricing in Mr. Hager's testimony is quite high.
Yes, especially for, you know, this is just looking at the Prairie Rose project.
Sure.
So very small volume of RECs.
Okay. Thank you. That's all we have on redirect.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Nothing.
I have no further questions.
It's Jeff Kotsako.
I have a couple. What percentage of RECs from the Minnesota company are available for sale, and what are being, you know, what percentage of RECs is being sold?
When you say Minnesota company, are you talking?
I mean Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota.
Oh, okay. Minnesota is not forecast to have any expiring RECs, so we are not actively selling RECs, and we have not sold any RECs from the Minnesota portfolio. So for North Dakota,
the full company portfolio, including North Dakota and South Dakota?
No, Minnesota State.
Okay.
North Dakota and South Dakota, we are actively looking for transactions to manage or to sell those RECs into, and that's about 10% of the NSP portfolio.
10% of the total or of the Minnesota company portfolio?
Of the NSP portfolio.
The whole NSP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's how much is actually being sold? Or is it all just looking at this point?
Well, we have made the one sale into North Carolina at the premium price, and I don't want to go into a closed session.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What can you give a percent, though? What percent that amounted to?
What percent of the portfolio?
Or portion of this 10%?
Oh, the percentage of the North Dakota portfolio, if we just look at 2011, the 2011 RECs in that portfolio, this sale was about 4% of that, the volume of those RECs. However, the revenue that we will accrue from that was nearly 100% of the revenue that we would have accrued if we would have sold everything at $1 a rec, let alone selling it at 65 cents into the voluntary market.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further?
No, thank you.
Commissioners?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your testimony. When were RECs created again? What year? I don't recall exactly. Was it 2006 or 5?
Or MRETs?
Yeah.
We started creating RECs and MRETs in December of 2007.
2007. So it is a relatively new concept for
yes.
Sure. You made a comment. I'm not trying to argue here by any means, but you said renewable energy standards are increasing. I haven't seen that. I've seen states go the other way.
No, I mean they're ramping up. They're not changing the legislation.
The legislation that was put into play is now coming into fruition.
Right. So, you know, we're at 10% now and by 20.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
Have you seen any states that have set out a standard that are now backing away from those standards because of the impact to consumers?
I have seen some states propose some legislation, but nothing has occurred with that in the last session. And I know Michigan is now looking at increasing their RPS to 25%.
Okay, fair enough. And I think that was it. Thank you.
Mr. Kramer. Mr. Fetch.
No questions. Thank you.
Okay, any follow-up?
Just one clarifying question. I just think it helps to clarify that for REC purposes, you track Minnesota RECs, South Dakota RECs, North Dakota RECs, and other states separately from each other. In other words, it's not just a bucket of RECs that you're selling at any given time.
We track the RECs from Northern States Power in MRETs. Mm-hmm. We track the RECs from Colorado and New Mexico in Regis. We track the Texas RECs in ERCOT. We track the Michigan RECs in MIRECs. So we're in all of those tracking systems, and I wish they would pick just one. It would make
Thank
my
you.
Life easier.
Mm-hmm. Just what we needed, a few more acronyms.
Yeah, sorry.
Mr. Grumman.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackler.
You can't sell into Michigan, though, can you? You have to – is it – Michigan require in-state RECs?
We're actually looking into that right now. Michigan does require in-state RECs, but we were proactive when the legislation was developed, and we are able to include our facilities that are in our Wisconsin, NSP Wisconsin footprint, as well as some of our old wind facilities that were online before January 1st of 2008. So there is an opportunity there that we could possibly sell into Michigan.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Anything else for this witness? Okay, you may step down. Thank you.
Your Honor, if we may, the company would like to recall Kurt Hager.
Mr. Hager, just a reminder that you're under oath.
Okay. You may proceed.
Welcome back. Mr. Hager, I think one of the issues that has come up several times is why the company brought the ADP in North Dakota when it did. What would you like to say about that?
I know there's been a lot of confusion, a lot of discussion about the timing of the ADP and did it follow 6 months or 9 months after Minnesota. I can tell you right now the company commits that from now on it'll file simultaneous ADPs within Minnesota and North Dakota so that we don't run into the confusion and problem in the future.
One of the issues for this proceeding is, of course, because we all acknowledge that the North Dakota ADP filing was after the PPA was signed, and there's been some discussion about what standards should apply in terms of determining prudence at the time the PPA was signed or later. Mm-hmm. There's also been some discussion whether this decision should have a rate-making type effect. In other words, would it affect rates and so on? In a rate-making proceeding, would you consider the circumstances, or would you be discussing the circumstances at the time the project was entered into, or would you be discussing the timing of the project as of the time the application was filed?
Again, my understanding is we apply more of the rate case type principle, and that would be the information that was available at the time of the decision.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to switch gears a little bit. In the opening you talked, or in your opening, I think, earlier, and it came up again in Mr. Hahn's testimony, you talked about the need to select economic energy at various points in time, and this kind of played into this need issue as well. I thought it might be helpful if you could provide an example of how that works. For example, if we say there's no need for Prairie Rose, how do we still get any benefit out of it at all at that point?
And again, you know, there was this question that Mr. Hahn had as far as does wind compete against gas and coal? Certainly wind is the first in the stack, so it's taken. But the fact is that it does compete on economics. So whenever wind is taken, as wind blows, what is displaced, the gas, the coal, that is the competition. It's price competition. It's economic competition. And our models capture all of that. So the question is, does it compete or not? It does on economics. And the results of that competition is what our model captures and our model evaluates. If you look at the plain and simple, no other type of factors involved, the contract cost of Prairie Rose and the energy cost or the value of the energy displaced, the Prairie Rose contract costs present value $280 million. The value of the energy displaced, $286 million. So contract cost to straight Prairie Rose displaced energy, Prairie Rose wins by $6 million present value. On top of that, that's when we add the other factors, integration, capacity cost, and REC value. Those are the four primary issues. Even if we throw out capacity value, as Ms. Clark just got done saying, the REC value at $1.50 over 20 years, that's all we have to achieve over 20 years to make this break even. The energy value is already there on the side of Prairie Rose. The integration cost, which hasn't been discussed much, we estimate, it's a forecast. Our forecast is around $2.25 a megawatt hour cost for integration. The current price in the MISO market for integration is more like 38 cents. So we have taken a very conservative view. Now, will that go up over time? It's a matter of how much more wind is added to the MISO footprint. But we took the study very conservatively at face value. So, I mean, when you look at this, energy cost Prairie Rose wins on, capacity, even if you zero it out, if you look at our estimate, a conservative estimate of integration, even when you add that in, the REC value only has to be $1.50 for this to break even on pure economics.
Now, one of the issues that Mr. Hahn raised is that RECs weren't pricing was not included in your initial analysis but was added later. Could you address why it's reasonable to include RECs in the analysis at all?
As Ms. Clark said, most of the recs that we get from our projects are expected to go towards compliance. Therefore, we don't generally value recs in our strategist model, even though it could, because we assume that they'll ultimately go to compliance. As was developed in the direction from the staff's testimony, where they were suggesting that we go ahead and liquidate these recs as opposed to save them for compliance, then we would start to place a value. It wasn't an oversight. It wasn't something unusual. It's the fact that we're actually contemplating liquidating the recs as opposed to holding them for compliance.
Now, you've said, I think, a few times here that our estimates are very conservative. Can you explain why NSP takes a conservative approach to its modeling and economic analyses?
Again, we try to use the information that's available at the time. And certainly, the only long-term projection, like on integration costs, that I had available so that I could look at was this study that was done back in 2006. Certainly, the current day market doesn't look like it's costing that much to integrate wind. But since that current day market is a snapshot in time, I have to use the only other information I have. And that study is the only other information I have. It appears to be conservative, but I think it's something that at least I can use as a projection that I can rely on from a third party. Most of the things that we present here, whether it's gas forecasts, whether it's rec quotes from brokers, are from third party, not the company. And we try to use that information to demonstrate why it's economic and why it's prudent. These are not numbers that were developed by the company. They're information that's presented by outside experts.
And so when we talk about using less conservative or maybe just estimates that are neither particularly conservative or particularly aggressive, the less conservative we are, the more the benefit for North Dakota ratepayers, correct?
Certainly. The more conservative we are, the more that we would err on the idea that there would be more savings rather than less.
Okay. One of the questions that came up, I believe, was how do you compare the price of Prairie Rose now to what you might be paying in the future for wind projects? And did you do any analysis of that comparison as opposed to Prairie Rose now versus gas now versus coal now? Can you address how you might look at that question?
When we've done our RFPs before, we actually ask bidders to provide us a PTC price and a non-PTC price so that we understand with some clarity exactly what that difference would be if and when the PTC expires. I think the expectation is that the current PTC would possibly expire at the end of this year. They've talked about resurrecting an ITC potentially for wind for 1 year or a phased-out approach that would still allow some incentive, but it would actually go away in time. But when you look at the difference between what we've seen in our bids that have come in, again, the prices without the federal subsidy are about 80% higher than what we see in this contract today. And so with the realization that there's a very good chance that subsidy will go away, what we're getting today, known bird in the hand type thing, is 80% lower than that potential future cost.
One of the other assumptions in your discussion has been the capacity credit and the assumption that the capacity credit could be earned starting in 2018. Can you explain why it's reasonable to assume or to incorporate into the model the presumption that the NZI will be converted to a conventional interconnection in 2018?
When we're looking from a resource planning perspective, that capacity, as we've demonstrated, has worth of about $14 million net present value to customers. With the idea that with the expansion of the transmission systems, that capacity will be available to convert it from an NZI to a traditional interconnect suggests that we would want to go get that value for our customers. We have a capacity need, a shortfall in 17 and 18, so we'll need the capacity. The transmission will be available at that time. As Mr. Oy's testimony points out on page 18, he doesn't anticipate much in the way of interconnection costs associated with that because of the transmission expansions, and that we would likely have a year or maybe year and a half to get the interconnection because now that they've done the queue reform. So I think all of those things point to a logical conclusion that we would most likely go after that capacity credit when we get closer to the time.
And is that based on both resource planning considerations and looking at the Prairie Rose PPA itself?
Yeah. Again, from a Prairie Rose PPA standpoint, would they want to go along with us? Certainly. If we work with them to get the interconnection moved from a net zero to a traditional interconnect, at the expiration of the 20 years, the first 20 years of that project, they will then have a project that can be rebid into the market with a traditional interconnect. It won't be restricted. It won't require an agreement. So there is a benefit for Prairie Rose to obviously go along with us and to make sure that it gets converted to a traditional interconnect.
One of the other questions I believe that came up in Mr. Hahn's opening was the value of NZI and how that's incorporated or not incorporated into the price of the Prairie Rose project. Could you elaborate on how you considered NZI valuation and your pricing of the various bids in the 2010 wind RFP?
As I said in my testimony, the fact is we view the net zero interconnect value was embedded in the price. And if we would have asked Prairie Rose to pay for that interconnection, they would have paid it, they would have raised their price, the net sum to our customers would have been the same. Now, Mr. Hahn raised the question of, well, what happens if you went to a non-net zero? And I discussed that in my testimony. I looked then at the next best alternatives to see if a payment for the net zero coupled with the Prairie Rose versus another project, if another project would have beat out Prairie Rose, and they wouldn't have. Prairie Rose still would have been the project to meet. And so net zero-sum game, the fact is they embedded their value in the PPA, and the customers, all of our customers, get that value.
A question that also came up is how Western North Dakota ratepayers might benefit from Prairie Rose project or don't benefit, depending on your point of view, if the transmission is more limited towards Western North Dakota. And my understanding is this has to do with energy mix and MISO, and I'd like you to address that, please.
Certainly, when you look at the bucket of energy and the bucket of energy costs, that wind project gets included in that full bucket. And when they send the specific electrons from our bucket of energy to the various components within the state, those electrons go via agreement. They don't get parsed out. So the fact is that when we put the value of Prairie Rose into our complete bucket of energy and our costs, all of our customers share in that because it's not the specific electron that's important. Electrons are displaced all over the grid. It's the fact of what we pay for energy, what we get credit for, and ultimately what we include in bills to all of our customers. And therefore, all of the customers in the state of North Dakota get that benefit.
One moment, please. I guess the question that comes up then, does that mean that the Prairie Rose energy gets used no matter what the transmission or how that might work out?
Ultimately, yes, because the energy, again, comes into the NSP account on MISO and then is distributed out. And whether it's in an exchange agreement or moves across a secondary transmission system, that is the same energy that we're buying and that everybody's getting credit for, and the costs are being shared by everybody. So even though the specific electron may not get there, they certainly get the benefit of that.
And is that process the same, even if the commission here were to disallow or find that there was no prudence finding in this proceeding? In other words, would you still have the same usage of energy and so on with regard to Prairie Rose, even if there was not a finding of prudence here today?
Yes.
Okay. Do you happen to have your rebuttal testimony there, Mr. Hager? This is Exhibit
I didn't
4.
Bring it.
I have a copy for you. It's no problem. Let's take a look at page 14, if we could, of your rebuttal testimony. You have a chart there on the reasonable range of economic analysis.
Yes.
I'd like you, if you could, just take a moment, maybe walk us through this. I think it might bring some clarity to some of the issues today, and in particular, how, if you use certain assumptions but not others, if the commission were to decide, for example, that the REC pricing it will accept but it doesn't want to include the capacity credit, how that would impact the analysis of the economic benefits of the Prairie Rose project.
So what I've did here is in the last two columns, the middle column and the right-hand column, was to identify kind of the range of expected outcomes that you could see. Again, straight up energy for energy, contract value of Prairie Rose versus displaced energy on the system. Prairie Rose is $5.7 million less expensive than what we normally would have dispatched at that same time. Capacity credits could range from zero, if we never convert it to a traditional interconnect, up to $13.5 million. The wind integration, again, from the study, not even from what we see in the market today, but what I view as a conservative study, is a $15.2 million cost. So we make sure that Prairie Rose pays for the idea that it is intermittent, because that is not as valuable of energy as something that's scheduled. And so we penalize the intermittent project that amount of money. And then again, the emissions reductions from SOx. So when you add all those up, you'll see that it ranges from an economic value of $4.5 million or $9 million to a cost of, or excuse me, a savings of $4.5 million to a cost of $9 million. And then when you add in the REC value, from something as what Ms. Clark has suggested would be the market value, has about $14.1 million of value. But even at 9.2, at $1.50 a REC over the whole 20 years, you can see that essentially the Prairie Rose project would break even or show a very small benefit.
Given all these issues that have been discussed today, I'd like to come back to the question I think that was asked of Ms. McCartan earlier. And that is, would the company have entered into the Prairie Rose Wind project and agreement if there were no Minnesota renewable energy standards to take into consideration here?
Yes, because, again, part of our overall strategy of balancing fuel costs and energy mix, we were looking for a product similar to Manitoba Hydro, where we didn't have fuel, natural gas cost exposure. And so when we look at it, there is a question of, does wind provide a hedge against gas? It does. It doesn't do it on a daily basis. It does it on an annual basis. You would look at the amount of gas that's displaced by the wind, and that wind, that gas that's displaced is hedged by that wind cost. It's not a perfect hedge. It's not on a flat contract value, but it is on an annual value.
Thank you, Mr. Hager. That's all we have.
Mr. Gorman.
May I have a moment? Very brief one. Thank you.
Let's take a 5-minute break.
Thank you, Honor.
That's good.
It does feel like I'm happy.
Well, why not number four?
He can see, and if you have it, then I'll ask him. Thank you. get for what?
Okay. Okay, back on the record, Mr. Grumman.
Rather than cross-examine this witness, advocacy staff will be recalling Mr. Hahn to the stand, so we defer at this time.
Okay, and I understand that you had an objection to that. You want to make that for the record?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea, Your Honor. I think our issue is that the company, as the party that filed the application that's seeking the determination of prudence here, has the burden and therefore consistent with that burden should be able to have the final word on the matter. I understand from talking with Your Honor that we'll have the ability to bring Mr. Hager or a different witness back if needed to further respond to Mr. Hahn, and we'll reserve that right, even though we understand it's not always convenient to have witnesses going back and forth, and we would apologize if that ends up needing to happen.
And I'm fine with that. And like I said off the record, you know, my feeling is that I want to have as thorough and complete a hearing as possible. We've got everybody here. Mr. Hahn came all the way from Massachusetts. Your witnesses have come from Minnesota. I want to make sure the commission has everything available to it to make this decision. And so I'm going to, you know, give a fair amount of leeway to allow that to happen here. So I guess my question at this point is, are you through with your rebuttal witnesses, or do you have another one you wish to call, Ms. Brahma?
No, we are through with our rebuttal, subject to any questions the commission might have for Mr. Hager. Okay. We could have some follow-up from that, I suppose. But at this point, no, we're
okay.
ready.
So at this point, I guess, Ms. Jeffcoat-Socker, did I give you your chance yet?
No, and I do have one question from Jerry, and I'm going to ask it in case... I don't want to regret later. I think you may have already answered it, but that's okay. Is the contract dispatchable? Is the Prairie Rose contract dispatchable or not?
Within the Prairie Rose contract, and I'm trying to go from memory here, I believe it has some curtailment rights within the contract, and the facility is actually on AGC, automatic generation control, so that we can curtail the output of it. That being said, in general, we look at wind projects as primarily must-take or full-take energy contracts. But we certainly do have AGC on it, and we do have the right to adjust its output.
Thank you.
Commissioners.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just thank you, Mr. Hager, for your additional testimony. It's always the point of the hearing where you've been here all day. I got to be careful I don't say something I regret later because I work with Dave Cedarquist. We all do, and a lot of local issues with Xcel Energy, and I think that there's always a good working relationship. It seems like the grassroots level. But, you know, the question that you received about why didn't you file the same time as you did Minnesota, you said that, well, from this point forward, we promise we'll do it at the same time. I mean, that kind of offended me, quite honestly. It's like we've heard that before, that Xcel is going to do something and they don't do it. So I would prefer you just answer the question is why you didn't file the same time instead of make promises that I don't think, quite honestly, that that's a decision for the CEO or somebody. I mean, do you make the decision when ADPs are filed?
I went up and got it. I went up and asked, can we make that commitment? Because I am not paid at that level. You're correct.
So who gave you that commitment?
I got it through Lauren McCartan, which I believe she got it from Judy Pulferl. And I don't know how far Judy went to get that. But we did ask and take it up the chain.
But could you maybe then just still answer why you didn't file at the same time as you did in Minnesota, based on what you know?
To be honest with you, what I do know is that, again, there was some concern about, I guess, some CapEx projects that were brought into North Dakota that either had some uncertainty, and within our regulatory group, there was the belief that the projects being brought to North Dakota should be to the point that they didn't have uncertainty. Whether I fully understand that, I'm not in that area, so I don't fully understand it, but that is my understanding of why they waited regulatory, waited to make the filing following the approval in Minnesota.
Okay. The maybe I'll just ask this question for the attorneys in the crowd. If he cannot speak to what Judy Pofari or Laura McCartan has said, it would be my understanding. So, I mean, isn't that fair? I think the, so. Would that be a late filed exhibit that Judy Pofari would submit, saying that she submits that she will file ADPs the same time as Minnesota from this point forward? Is that a fair request for a late filed exhibit? Otherwise, it, to me, it has no relevance whatsoever.
Well, Ms. Barham is looking at me. Commissioner, I think that it's somewhat of a collateral issue to this particular hearing. I mean, I think
his testimony told me he said that they will this point forward.
I understand
forward.
He said that, and there was no objection to it. And it but I guess the problem that I have is, you know, we can ask them to file a late-filed exhibit that in the future they'll do this, but the issue that I think we're presented with here needs to be decided regardless of whether we get that promise from them. So
I understand. That's a fair point.
I mean, I think we need to focus on what this is about. And I have to admit, from my perspective, it's unusual to be asked to approve the prudence of a project that's already been started and is almost completed by the time you're asked to approve it. But it is what it is. So
I'll just
if I may, Your Honor. Oh, I'm sorry, no, Commissioner.
Go ahead.
What I would offer is that there would be an affidavit submitted to that effect. Advocacy staff would not object to hearsay.
Okay.
I was going to. That was part of the reason I was looking at you, judges. It is sort of a hearsay question. And typically we don't have hearsay issues in these proceedings. And to the extent Mr. Hager is talking about what Laura McCartan has told him. Certainly, he's telling this commission what he has heard, and shouldn't be hopefully not any question about that. We certainly would be happy to follow up with the company further if there is something that this commission would like to see. And the problem is, of course, I can't say what form that would be, but at the same time, I do know that the commitment Mr. Hager is making has, as he said, been run up the chain of the company.
Well, with that, I mean, Commissioner Fetch.
If I may, at the same time Commissioner Kalk was raising this, I was writing down, get it in writing. And I'm not sure it needs to be offered as an exhibit where we go through all the hearsay problems and whatever. We have on the record the statement, though, of Mr. Hager that he would commit that from now on the company will make simultaneous filings. I think what I would like to see is I would like to see that memorialized separately in a document to the commission. I don't think it needs to become an exhibit for this hearing, but because it affects future ADPs as well, I would like to see you simply provide that from Judy Pofferl and or Lauren McCartan, say within the next 2 weeks in writing, so we have it for the future.
Mr. Kramer.
Oh, no, I have strong opinions about it that I'll reserve for the close because I think, frankly, Mr. Hager is put into a position that he hasn't earned and deserved, but I appreciate his willingness to take the arrows.
It's an unfortunate situation, but I do think that that's really outside the scope of this particular proceeding. For purposes of this proceeding, it's already come in, so it's like closing the barn door after the horses got out anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll just proceed from here with the understanding that I think you got the message how this commission feels about the way this one was done. And going forward, you know, common sense will prevail. But let's pick up where we left off, I think. Commissioner Kalk, do you have any more questions?
I don't, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Kramer, do you have any questions for Mr. Hager at this point?
You know, I would have one. I'm going to ask you, and I should have asked you this the first time, so I apologize, but I appreciate the opportunity to ask it now. And I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Hahn. If this was not approved, or better, if the project had never been built, or if there had never been a purchase power agreement for Geronimo, 200 megawatts from Geronimo, what impact would that have on North Dakota ratepayers next year? And years after that?
subsequent?
Based upon our modeling and based upon our economic analysis, without the Prairie Rose Project, customers in North Dakota will pay more for their energy than they would have under the scenario with Prairie Rose. So I would have expected higher bills, higher energy bills for North Dakota customers under the scenario without Prairie Rose.
Okay. I have nothing further.
Commissioner Fetch.
Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Any follow-up?
No, I don't. The only thing I would add, I think, is just that to the extent Commissioner Kramer's question, it all gets into the mechanics of how it would work as opposed to the end result on bills. That's a very complicated question that hasn't been briefed or is not in testimony here. So I don't know if we're getting there yet. We may not. But that's something that would probably require a whole separate discussion on in a separate setting.
Okay, and would you prefer to address that in the briefs?
You know, I don't know that we have a good sense for how to deal with that at this point. I'm not sure what – maybe something we need to follow up with staff and then make a determination that way and make a proposal after talking with staff a little bit about it.
Okay. Mr. Grumman, anything?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
No, sir.
Okay, Mr. Hager, I'm going to let you stand down. I have a feeling you might be back in the hot seat one more time. Ms. Brahma, what's next?
We have nothing further at this time.
Okay, Mr. Grumman, is it your intention to call Mr. Hahn at this time?
Yes, Your Honor, we recall Mr. Hahn.
Mr. Hahn, just a reminder that you're still under oath.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Hahn, you were here and listened to the last two witnesses by the company. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
You have some opinions to offer in that regard?
Briefly, just a couple.
Thank you.
The company stated that it would make simultaneous filings with all of its regulatory commissions in the future, and I appreciate that. But I would suggest that those filings have the approval of the project contingent on regulatory approval, not just simultaneous filing. The simultaneous filing without an approval right by this commission really doesn't really do very much. As far as Mr. Hager's statement that NSP will go after the capacity credit for Prairie Rose Wind, and I think he said Prairie Rose Wind will go along with it, I guess I have to respectfully disagree. There's nothing in that contract requires them to do that. They are a for-profit company, and they will seek to, if in fact they do get capacity value, they will seek more money for that from the company or from somebody else. And then secondly, as far as the economic analysis goes, we're still talking. Mr. Hager claims that this project is economic, but that still assumes what will be two-year-old gas prices. It assumes we get the full REC value, and despite the best efforts of Ms. Clark and the company, I don't think there's any assurance that...
I don't think there's any assurance that those revenues will be there, and it's pretty clear to me they won't get capacity. So I'll just, in the interest of being brief, I'll leave my comments there.
Mr. Grumman, anything else?
Just one more.
And by that, I mean, is there anything else in Mr. Hager's rebuttal testimony that you want to follow up on?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that his rebuttal testimony would also include Ms. Clark as well, correct?
As well.
Thank you. Just one further question. Before, I'm sure you recall the testimony by Mr. Hager that it's important for rates to assume a conservative approach. Wouldn't you agree that if you're a company and you're looking at a conservative approach, you would not include RECs, and you would not include credited capacity?
I would not. In the case of capacity, I don't believe there's any way they're going to get that capacity for no additional cost, and I believe the RECs are uncertain. So, yeah, a true conservative approach would not include those.
Thank you, Mr. Hahn. I have no further questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Go ahead. I have no questions.
Okay. Commissioners? Okay. Ms. Brahma?
None.
Okay. And I think you're back off.
Thank you again, Your Honor.
And are you going to recall Mr. Hager?
I believe we need to because there were some characterizations there that I'm afraid we need to address.
Okay.
So I'll ask Mr. Hager to come back.
Welcome back. You're still under oath. Okay.
Mr. Hager, let's start with this idea that Prairie Rose will want more value for capacity if we convert to a traditional interconnection. How is capacity typically treated in PPAs of this kind? Is it separately monetized or no?
It is not separately monetized. We do not specifically draw it out. This PPA is just like all of our other wind PPAs, with the exception that this PPA was based upon obtaining a net zero interconnect instead of a traditional interconnect. So that is why we believe we don't have any special provisions or anything that calls out in our PPA contracts. This is our standard contract. And the fact is the capacity value is created by the acceptance of the energy, which we are the full energy off-taker.
Mr. Hahn just testified a moment ago that he considers it not conservative to include RECs or capacity credit in this model. Beginning with REC revenues and the issue of whether there's any assurance that REC revenues can be guaranteed, how is that kind of forecasting different, in your view, than other kinds of forecasting of what revenues might be accrued, what costs might be for a particular project?
It's not any different. It's just like the gas forecast, the coal forecast, the integration forecast, they're all forecasts.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to just address the issue of why it is conservative and reasonable, reasonableness being our standard today rather than conservative, to include capacity credits and REC values in the modeling that you've undertaken.
Well, certainly as the testimony of Ms. Clark presented, the market value for RECs exceeds the minimum that we would have for a break-even. And we think we would be able to sell the RECs, liquidate the RECs, and bring that value back to North Dakota customers. And so I think it's reasonable to assume that. Again, we went to three outside brokers, three independent brokers, not the company, to get an idea of the forecasted price. And so that's one of the reasons I think that validates the suggestion that the market is there for that kind of REC pricing. And as far as the capacity credit goes, I think it's going to be available. The transmission is going to be available to actually have that capacity credit. We have a need in 18. I think we'll be very successful at being able to look at getting that capacity credit.
Okay. And then is it your understanding, Mr. Hager, frankly, I hope this is a fair question for you, but you can tell me if it's not. Is it your understanding that different jurisdictions have different filing requirements as to when you must file for a project and what approvals are needed and so on?
Yes.
And it's my understanding, sitting here today, that you're not making a commitment for all jurisdictions in which NSP operates, just with regard to North Dakota.
Just with North Dakota.
Okay. I just think we'll make that clear so that we don't have any confusion on that front. Thank you, Mr. Hager.
Mr. Grumman.
Nothing, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
No questions.
Commissioners, ask a set of questions.
I'm going to. I hope it's not too far outside the scope of this. If not, you're going to satisfy my curiosity. With relation to the relation between gas and wind, because you've stated that when we've talked about, I've raised my concern about the statement that wind sort of hedges against gas, and you've explained it well, and others have as well, but doesn't the very presence of wind energy create an additional incentive to build gas just because of its dispatchability and its ability to back wind up?
Again, if you look at the sequence of how resource planning would be done, the idea that you're getting your capacity, the first side of the equation, capacity first, making sure you make peak day. Then the question is, which fuel do you burn? And in this case, it's natural gas, either in a combined cycle that's already there or a peaker that's already there, or burning wind energy. And that's the energy difference. And so you have to kind of look at it as a shift. It's not that I acquire wind and then build gas to back it up. I build the gas, and then I decide if I want to run the gas or run wind instead, because it's that energy interplay.
I understand. Of course, you don't get to make that. God makes that decision for you.
Correct. And the nice thing is since I'm looking at the total annual cost as opposed to, then I look at that hedge over the full year as opposed to any individual hour.
And thus you get the 12% capacity value of the nameplate.
Yeah, that's a little bit even different, but yeah.
Sure. Okay. But thanks for helping me out. Yeah.
Anything else, Commissioner Betch?
Nothing, thank you.
Chairman Koch?
Hey. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Grumman.
One moment.
No, Your Honor. Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat. Okay. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? Do we need to put any more witnesses on? Or?
We have no more witnesses. I don't know if you're anticipating a closing.
I was just going to ask, but before we get there, anything else from the PSC as far as witnesses or testimony?
Not from advocacy.
Mr. Jeff Gutzak?
No, we don't have any witnesses.
Okay. Now, before we get to closing remarks or any of that, just a question about, is there any other documents or anything else that you feel you need to put into evidence today?
We don't have anything further.
Okay. Mr. Grumman?
Nor advocacy.
Ms. Jeff Gutzak?
Nothing.
All right. Then, before I go to closing comments from the attorneys, I just want to, for the record, we usually allow public input at some of these hearings. I'm not sure if that would be appropriate at this one, but my understanding is it would be, okay. There is one individual who's been sitting here who is not aligned with either party. I've already checked with him off the record. He does not want to get up and make a comment. Is that correct, sir? Okay, so, and unless there's somebody else out there that raises their hand right now, we'll skip the public comment portion of this and move on to closing remarks from counsel. Now, we did have a pre-hearing conference, commissioners, in which the attorneys agreed that they would provide proposed findings of fact, conclusions, and order by December 1st. And I think we're still going to stick to that plan. Is that correct? We also talked today about a couple issues that we'll need to brief, which includes the Minnesota statute and how the off-ramp works. I'm going to give the attorneys an opportunity for closing comments. Then I'm going to give the commissioners an opportunity for closing comments. Then I'm going to close the hearing. So I'll start with you, Ms. Brown. Do you have some closing comments you'd like to make today?
Yeah, just very brief. Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, we'd just like to thank the commissioners, ALJ Ward, staff, for your time. I think it's been a very interesting and productive discussion. This is a very tough issue is involved in any kind of proceeding like this, and we appreciate your time today. We do also appreciate the opportunity to brief some of the issues that ALJ Ward identified, particularly because with the issue of the standard for prudence, there's some legal components to that discussion, and we'd like to address those. And we are also happy to, if there's another issue that should come up in further discussions, we're happy to brief further or meet further as needed. Otherwise, we are, as I said, very appreciative of the time here today. The company is does believe strongly that it made a reasonable decision to enter into the Prairie Rose PPA, and we hope that the comments that have been offered here today answer some of the key questions you may have had. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Grumman, closing comments?
And I'll also be brief. As indicated, there will be written final argument, and that issue, or one of the main issues, will be the determination of when the actual gas prices will be used, and I think that's real central to your determination. So thank you again for your time, and I think we had a very good hearing today, and I have nothing further.
And I think, just my own two cents worth on that, I mean, it really does seem like this is going to come down to a determination of whether or not you use the standard then or the standard now, which is the difference, in, it seems to me, one of the fundamental differences between the two sites. I think it's very important that you address that in your briefing from a legal standpoint, so that the commissioners have that available to them when they make this decision. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any closing comments?
I only have a housekeeping comment, and that is to I'd like to keep the original in one set of the confidential exhibits that we'll keep locked up, but the others should all be returned.
Okay, and will we be returning those to council for NSP?
I think so, yes.
Before they leave? Okay.
Before we leave, right.
That sounds good. Now, closing comments from the commissioners. Chairman Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank the company for your work putting this together, and advocacy staff and our staff. I think today's discussion was just indicative of the complexities of trying to work in multi-state jurisdictions and timing and what's good for one group and another group. But I think for me the big thing is, you know, basics of the North Dakota Public Service Commission is just as important as the Minnesota Public Service Commission. And if the commitments made, whether it be 2007 or beyond, they need to be followed through if we're going to continue to develop that trust at all levels. And I said this briefly a few minutes ago, but I really feel positive about the way that Xcel Energy has worked with the North Dakota Public Service Commission on some of the reliability issues, some local issues we've had with all the flooding that's taken place. But I still continue to be very, very frustrated with the working dialogue that takes place between the upper levels of the company and the North Dakota Public Service Commission. So we'll look forward to your filings. We have a commission meeting Wednesday. We'll schedule a work session after December 1st on this. And after that work session, I suspect we'll quickly garner a path forward and get to a vote as perhaps as late as or as early as December. We need to do that. But just thank you all for your good work and look forward to filings.
Mr. Kramer.
Well, I too thank everybody for their hard work, both in it well in advance and today. I might just expound a little more. I've been on the commission now a little over 9 years, and I have, over the course of that time, heard Xcel witness after Xcel witness after Xcel witness pledge, promise, greater collaboration, you'll be more involved in our resource planning. And yet, pretty much the only things we've ever gotten are when we have these opportunities in a case filed by the company to put witnesses on the stand and get them to promise to do the right thing under oath. And quite honestly, that doesn't build trust. It doesn't build trust. It deteriorates it, as far as I'm concerned. When we've talked about greater consideration for generation in North Dakota, it's not like we're not pretty darn good at developing generation in North Dakota. Like I've said, we are the sixth leading exporter of electricity in this country, and yet our largest utility can't bring itself to seriously consider something in North Dakota. You can say you've seriously considered it. It's never worked out. You know, we promise we'll do it in 5 years. 6 years later, it's not done. My frustration level is to a point where I do want to vote on this, Commissioner Calk. December 21st is our last scheduled meeting this year. I hope that we can have a work session between December 1st and December 21st and have this vote. The point I want to make, I guess, is that the pledges made even on the witness stand for future, again, not really relevant to current, don't mean a lot to me, quite honestly. When it was time for Minneapolis beautification, North Dakotans got stuck with 5.8% of it. When it's time for, you know, Minnesota, for fuel changes in Minnesota plants, North Dakotans get stuck with 5.8% of it. And yet while North Dakota builds up 1,500 megawatts of nameplate capacity wind for other utilities and other merchants, Xcel is unable somehow to make it work. And so we get movement when we require it. When I want, you know, some consideration for Fargo reliability, we have to require it in a rate case. When we want consideration for, you know, even downtown Fargo beautification, it's, you know, we'll see. And here we come to an ADP before us, the case today. It's only here because we required it. And it's here after the decision's been made to buy it.
That's not advance. So when I, you know, that's why I didn't want to push it any further with Mr. Hager. He made a pledge on behalf of the company that he was sincere. He's not in a position to make that pledge. But it was sincere. Problem is the people that can make that pledge aren't here. And so when I consider today's evidence and today's testimony, I consider it all in the context of the fact that previous testimony hasn't lived up to the word. So it's not just what's in the record that matters to me. It's the credibility of the people saying it. So it's my hope that we can have the vote on this, if not at the December 21st meeting, at a special meeting before the end of this year. Thank you.
Mr. Fetch.
Well, as a new commissioner, of course, I don't have all the history of, that Commissioner Kramer refers to in terms of distrust and, Commissioner Kalk as well. But I did... This is the company's opportunity to rectify that somewhat and to build a little bit of trust with me. I have asked for, within 2 weeks, which is November 5th, a letter of commitment regarding simultaneous filing with Minnesota and North Dakota. If we receive that by November 5th, that will go a long way to building some trust, at least with this commissioner. Other than that, thank you for the testimony. It's a lot of points that were basically very confusing for me. I have a lot more clarity about those. So I appreciate your appearance here today. Thank you.
Okay, anything else for the good of the record before we close the hearing?
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
No, thank you.
Okay, then at this time, which is approximately 12 minutes to 3, I'm going to close the hearing in case number PU-12-59.
Here are my non-public.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah.
Is that a shredder?
Sorry. Yeah, I think I'll put this here.